If you push God away, you do not have any choice but to accept the idea life came from no life, complicated life evolved from simple ones, or naturally. Because you exclude the supernatural, right?
Welcome to Real Science Radio. We have a very special guest joining us today.
That's right, Fred. It is great to be back with you. We have Dr. Changa Tan, received her PhD in biochemistry from the University of Pennsylvania, an MS in organic chemistry from Nankai University in Tianjin, China. And she also studied for postdoctoral fellow for the Department of Genetics at Harvard Medical School. Tan served as an associate professor in the Division of Biological Studies at the University of Missouri before working as a founder and investigator for the Forest Life Research and Education Center. Dr. Tan's interests include origin of life and biodiversity, the relationship of organisms, molecular biotechnology method development, reproduction, and signal transduction. Some of which she will have to explain to me, most of which she will have to explain to me. Dr. Tan has written nearly 30 refereed journal articles, including several for the Answers Research Journal, and she is the co-author, along with Rob Stadler, of an eye-opening book, The Stairway to Life, An Origin of Life Reality Check, in which the authors, Fred, specify requirements for the spontaneous formation of life and evaluate the prospects for natural processes to satisfy these requirements.
Well, welcome to the show, Dr. Tan. And I gotta know, did Doug get your name right?
Chang'e in Chinese, but I tell people my name is Change. It's easier, but most people don't dare to say my name is Change because it's too strange. But when you call me Change, I will respond. When you say Chang'e now, normally I won't because I forget my real name.
It sounds like you got pretty close, but... Dr. Tan, Sal Cordova mentioned you on a past show, and I recall you have an interesting story and a journey from really the secular mainstream science, you know, the world of, as my co-host likes to say, Harvard. That was pathetic, I know, Doug, to working as a creationist scientist. So can you start off by sharing with our audience a little bit about your journey from the secular world of science?
Well, I was born and raised as an atheist. I became a Christian in late my life.
Okay.
If I can say that. So in 2004, actually, I became a Christian. And then in 2005, I went to University of Missouri as an assistant professor. 1 year later, I was asked to teach molecular biology, a course I myself had never taken because I was actually trained as a chemist in China. Oh. I had actually a master degree in physical organic chemistry before I came to U.S. to pursue my PhD in biochemistry.
Well, so Dr. Tan, I have to stop you right there because so growing up as an American.
No. Grow up as English Chinese.
Yes. You grew up as Chinese. Right. So me growing up as an American.
Oh, okay.
Have no idea what it must be like. So what are the criteria in China for a woman, a girl, to qualify for the pursuit of a college degree, an advanced degree? How do you get on that course being a girl growing up in China?
By God's grace, if you look back. Yeah, actually, because my family was from a little country from the south of China, I was stopped from going to school pursuing my education at all after I had 5 years of elementary school education. And then the political situation changed in China. So from like a person needs to be recommended to go to a university, not by merit, right? But by kind of your relationship with people. So suddenly the situation was changed that Deng Xiaoping, so Xiaoping Deng, if you know that, you know, he changed the policy that student would go to the college by merit. So my county had a new policy say, you know, we're going to recruit 100 students throughout the county by merit. At that time, I was farming, all right? Even though I was not even a teenager. I was a preteen, and I was stopped from going to school. So all my teachers in my previous life came to my home asking my dad for me. And my dad said, oh, you know, can you have a cup of tea? There's no tea. How about some food? And they said, no food. We don't want anything from you but your daughter.
Oh, man.
So, at the end, my dad agreed that he would allow me to go to participate in entrance exam. He said, well, if she was accepted, then she can go back to school. But if not, that's the end of her education. So by God's grace, you know, I was accepted as one of the 100 students in my whole county. And later on, 4 years later, I became the first university student in my village ever.
Wow.
Wow.
And by God's grace, I came to US later.
Did they know to pick you? Like, did they come to your house because they knew that you were special already in education and in your intelligence? Or is it just a random process?
Well, my teacher knew I was a good student, right?
Okay, gotcha. So your teacher, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you needed to take an exam to compete with people all around the county, not only the countryside, but, you know, the city girls, city boys. So you needed to get your best student, I think, to try to do that, all right?
Okay, so made your way to the United States, and
just to clarify, so my conception of China is that the state kind of decides everything for everybody's life, and it sounds like that sort of was the case before Deng Xiaoping changed the policy. What's it like for kids in China today? Do you have any idea?
You still, you know, a lot of things are based by merit. If unless your family is in a special position, maybe you have a special treat. But most of the time, people compete.
So the communists did learn something from the free world, that if they introduce merit, they could improve their civilization. Interesting.
Yeah, I guess.
So how did you go from a chemist in China? How did you get to America?
That's connected by 1989. I think 89, you know, something happened in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember. I do remember.
With the gunshot. So then I decided, you know, I needed to leave the country. But to do that, the only way for me is to go to a university for education, right? So I needed to have, I needed to take exam for TOEFL, so text for English as a second language, and GRE. But at that time, to take those exams, you needed to have a permission from your employer. You needed to have a letter of recommendation to take the exam. And you can get that letter if you have worked for the government for 5 years after you graduate from college, or you have relatives in foreign country outside of the or outside of China. I had none, so I could not even able to take the exam.
Okay.
At the same time, a faculty member in the department where I had my master degree in organic chemistry, he contacted me because I did my research and with a master degree, and my research ended up an article. But my advisor had left to France. So this faculty member asked me, well, can you actually revise your own article to be published? I said, yes. So I revised my article, and that actually was my first scientific publication. So later on, he asked me, well, are you willing to come back to pursue a PhD? Since I could not take the exam to go to abroad, right? Because I did not have I did not have any relative abroad. I just started working, so it's like lasting a year. I graduated from my master degree in 1988, and 1989 was the time the Tiananmen Square event happened. So he asked me whether, you know, I would be willing to go back to pursue a PhD. I agreed because, I could not go abroad. I said, okay, maybe I just go to a PhD study inside China. So I went back to pursue a PhD in chemistry. In the meanwhile, I became pregnant with my older daughter. So I stopped in the middle, and then I took a TOEFL exam, a GRE exam, after my daughter was born, and I came to U.S. in 1994 for my PhD study in biochemistry.
So that got you to the United States pursuing a PhD.
Right. The reason I changed from chemistry to biochemistry was I was just so intrigued by how human mind work. You know, how can we have a free thought, basically, right? We can think about the things or make stories about things that we have never seen in our life. And so how could we do that? How can we, our brain do that, all right? If it's only chemistry, how could the reaction, you know, produce some free thoughts, all right? That's my idea of maybe I could use my knowledge in chemistry and apply that into biology. That's biochemistry. I can find some answer. So basically, I my life is really driven by my curiosity.
Yeah. So that's when you started having like cracks into your atheistic worldview, right?
No, it sounds like. Not yet.
Oh, not yet? Okay.
That's right.
So, not quite yet.
So we're still around 1994. You've come to America. You're working on your PhD in biochemistry now.
Right.
Wow. Fascinating story. And so is that where you began to become interested in origin of life, or did that come later?
Much later.
Oh, okay. I remember Sal mentioned that there was a Nobel Prize winner that had recommended you for something. I'm just, you know, I'm relying on my memory on that show that we had with Sal Cordova.
Yeah, that's years later. So I was, I think in 1997, I was invited to go to a Christian gathering, winter conference, where gospel would be presented, right? But of course, I was lured to there, not because I'm interested in Jesus, but I was told, well, you know, you get free food, free lodging, and also right. we'll give you $30 of a scholarship for going. So I said, okay, yeah, because I have been studying so hard, so I need a break.
You're hungry.
I was hungry and tired. So and then I went and one afternoon, so that's a several days gathering, one afternoon, a professor, actually, no, not a professor, I think he's a pastor. He said, I think you're going to believe in Jesus. I was like, you are crazy. So that night, a professor, actually a university professor, he was the speaker, and he talked about the sun, the moon, and the stars. And suddenly it hit me that I had been using double standards. You know, with the science, I was always open. Regardless whether I understood it or not, I accepted it. Like, you know, electron clouds. Nobody has seen electron clouds, but I believed it. You know, basically quantum chemistry, right?
Right.
But with Jesus, you know, without thinking, immediately I say no, right? So one is always open, accepting, regardless of whether I understood it or not. With God or Jesus is refusing without thinking, right? Maybe that was a God-giving grace moment. That was my first turning point of becoming a Christian. So I decided that, well, now I want to use the same standard about science and about religion. So I am going to investigate about the Jesus thing, right?
Okay.
So yeah, I went back and started to read the Bible from the beginning, from Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So that was my first turning point, and I started reading the Bible, as I said, and then I reached to the story of Abraham, and saw Abraham lied 2 times, not only once, 2 times. I said, what? You know, at the same time, I started to go to church once a month, because we had a special gathering once a month. In Philadelphia, the Chinese gathering, of course. So I learned that Abraham was the father of a faith, but he lied 2 times. Well, he did not kill me. And I kept on reading until I reached 2 Samuel about David and Bathsheba.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, you're reading stories where it's lending truth to it because it's talking about, like you said, Abraham lied twice. And, you know, the Bible documents all the flaws of the kings, like, you know, David and Bathsheba. And somebody who's writing a book and they're trying to fake it, they're not going to write about all the bad things. Is that kind of part of what led you to... And I did want to get back to you started with Genesis. So when you first started with it, because you have this atheistic worldview, were you at first like, oh, no, this didn't happen in 7 days. I mean, the earth is millions of years old. Do you remember your thoughts at all back then?
I did not stop there to think. That was too far away from me yet. So I read on, I met Abraham, and I met David, you know, I saw David lying, committing adultery and killing, but he was also known as a person after God's own heart.
Right.
So I was like, well, this is enough. If God is... as what the Bible describes, right? I do not want to have any connection with this God.
Because that's really difficult, right?
He is supposed to be all knowing, right? So he should have known about Abraham and his lies and about David, right? So how could a God who is all-knowing choose somebody as bad as Abraham or even worse as David, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He should have chosen somebody better. That David not only killed Goliath, but also my pursuit of Jesus. So that's the end of my pursuing. And I stopped reading the Bible. I stopped going to church. So only by God's grace, 8 years later, when I was in Harvard, a crisis occurred in my life. I did not know what to do. So I decided to fast, even though I did not believe in Jesus or any God.
So this is while you were going to Harvard?
Yes.
Of all places. Okay.
Right. So I decided to fast, which is a real big decision for me. Mm-hmm. Because going in south of China, I needed to have dry ice, three times a day, 3 meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If I don't, then I become hungry very fast, and I would have a very severe headache. Mm. So that day, I decided to fast, prepared to be hungry and to have a very severe headache. But I decided to fast and I went to work without breakfast. I just decided to skip breakfast, not even lunch or dinner, just a warm meal, right? That's a lot for me already. Yeah. So I went to work. I worked all morning. And suddenly I noticed my watch was pointing to 1 p.m. I said, whoa, 1 p.m.? That's weird because I should be hungry and I should have a very severe headache, right? So what is going on? My science seems cannot give me any answer. The only reasonable answer I can have is where God is real. And he's living, because otherwise, whatever I'm doing would have nothing to do with him, right? I should be hungry. I should have a very severe headache. So facing the kind of a reality about all the fact as a scientist, right? Facing the fact, the evidence of of God being real and living, the only logical thing I can do is accept it. I have no other choices. So I became a Christian at the end of 2004.
Okay. Was this around the same? Did you have like an aha moment too with, Darwinian evolution, or did that come later?
But before you go there, Dr. Tan, just I want to make clear, there was a crisis in your life, right? There was a crisis in your life on that day that you fasted, and that crisis in your life brought back to memory this idea about God and double standards. And at some point you accepted the reality that God exists. Am I hearing that right?
The crisis brought me to pray to
pray
God.
To God.
I don't believe him.
Right, absolutely.
So
praise the Lord.
That's fast, right. Yeah. So, because that's the last straw, right? Whatever. So
Yeah,
I did not know Christ. I did not believe in Jesus. I did not believe in God, but I was like, okay, maybe I can try and see whether I can solve my crisis, because I don't know what to do with it.
Wow.
So I became a Christian in 2000. That's the end of 2004. And then 2005, I accepted the position at the University of Missouri. Started officially September 1st. We had 1 year free time to set up our labs. So then in 2006, so 1 year later, I was asked to teach molecular biology.
Okay.
By the Nobel Prize winner.
Okay, I was wondering if that was where he comes into the picture.
So
okay.
He asked me whether I was willing to teach molecular biology. And I said yes. So that his ask and my yes forever changed my life, without his knowing nor my knowing. Because as I said, I was trained as a chemist, so I had never taken molecular biology myself. I had to self-teach to teach my students. While I was preparing for my lecture for molecular biology, I noticed that the genes involved in DNA replication, transcription, and the translation for bacteria and the eukaryotes are mostly unrelated. So those bacterial use will be bacterial specific. You do not find anything similar in eukaryotes, vice versa.
So there's a big gap between prokaryote and eukaryote? Is that what we're getting at?
Yes, if you could allow me to show the slide about...
Stop the tape. Hey, this is Dominic Enyart jumping into the broadcast, and we are out of time here on today's Real Science Radio episode. If you want the rest, join us next week for another installment of this radio program, Fred and Doug. They went a little bit long today, and so we're splitting the show into two programs. If you want the rest, join us next week. Hey, may God bless you guys. Oh, and you can check out enyart.shop for all of Bob Enyart's Bible studies, his science products. Enyart.shop for that. You can get all access for just $10 a month. Hey, may God bless you guys, and we'll see you next week.